Blog Talk Radio.
We are now on the air. Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Getting Light. Tom Dormer is with us again for his weekly Thursday talk and on the struggles in and from life resulting in incarceration, prison issues, releases, struggles after incarceration, and goals. Tom has been educating us and bringing on occasionally former fellow prisoners to talk about their experiences while in prison and the lack of rehabilitation they received or were afforded the opportunity of participating in. If any of you think you should know what prisons are all about or what they offer for rehabilitation, education, work, or even food, think again. The monies that taxpayers are spending to house, feed, and rehabilitate the incarcerated fallen is not at all being used for that purpose. Tom is going to be with us today. He may not be able to stay the whole time because he is traveling. So let's once again welcome Thomas Dormer. Tom, are you on with us?
Yes, I am. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Welcome.
It's nice to be here. It's nice to always check in and talk and spread awareness.
As always, we look forward to hearing from you. You always offer so much, and it's so interesting to hear of what you do and what you've been about. And Tom, for those of you who do not know, Tom had a dream at the age of 7 to become a professional soccer player. And those dreams fell apart. So Thomas's goal these days is going in a different direction in the areas of still helping others and helping to prevent incarceration for so many people that are out in the communities today. And it can happen to anyone because incarceration, offenses, mistakes are made, and you never know where they're going to be going or coming from. It's like lightning. It can strike anyone, anywhere, and anytime. So, again, let's welcome Thomas Dormer. So, Tom, what do you have for us this week?
Well, just checking in. Everything's going well. I just had my third ACL surgery, unfortunately, in 25 months. And some people might hear that and know sports and think I'm crazy that I still have my dreams and aspirations. But I still have belief. Every time you have surgery, you gain more knowledge and more knowledge. And just like in life, the older you get, the more mature you get, the more you grow up. And I'm very blessed that I'm a very determined person. And I'm glad the world is where it's at, unfortunately, just because that's a reality. You know, everybody wishes, you know, there was no racism and, you know, we weren't rioting and protesting and having to do things like that. But that's just a fact. You know, to have uncomfortable conversations brings out a lot of good. You know, just like somebody like me when I went to prison, that's an uncomfortable conversation when you get out and you let somebody know you have a record. And, you know, some people treat you good, and some people look past it, and some people don't. That's just a fact of the matter. You know, for somebody that has a criminal record for the rest of their life, there will be a small percentage of people that just write them off. And I know the first common thing most people want to say is, oh, well, you don't need that person in your life anyway. Yeah, but that's less opportunities, and that's not the way the world should be. You know, you should be afforded the same opportunity as somebody else if you're in the same position as them. And it's just nice to finally have all these conversations, and I've spoken many times about my privilege of being white and you know, what I've seen behind bars. You know, it's mind-blowing to see things still happening outside on the streets in 2020 with police officers killing innocent black men. But at the same time, how do you think correctional officers that just need a high school diploma treat black men in prison? We're just focused on all the people that are dying, but there is a high percentage of people that don't end up dying in these altercations, and they end up getting thrown in a box. And to be honest, that's the same as dying for most of these people, coming out after years of no support, years of depression, years of literally being in a 6x8 box just because they're not physically dead. That does something to the mind and to a human being. So it was just it's nice to finally have these conversations, because I've been speaking up the whole time since I've been out, is, well, if you think people are treated negative by the police force or negative by people out here because of the color of their skin or criminal records, well, what do you think they're treated like behind bars where there are no cameras, where there are no people to stand up for them?
I want to thank you for that, because that's been on my heart since all of this happened, is what happens to those who are incarcerated? You know, they're probably being oppressed or abused since this has all been going on. They probably are being abused because they know that no one's focusing on the prisons. They're focusing on those out in the street. And this is a major problem. And I thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. One of the most important figures, I've had a lot of them. I've had about four or five really important figures that shaped my life in there. None of them being the same skin color as me. Coming from various backgrounds, to Hispanic, Native, and being Black. But I'm just blessed that one of my brothers in there, you know, you have different. I have role models in there, like Loke. I brought him on last weekend, and he'll be on the following Thursday, next Thursday. He was a role model. You know, even though he's my brother, he was a role model. He was more of a older figure that I listened to so, and I had so much respect for. And sometimes in there you just have brothers where you have the same respect for them, you love them the same, but, you know, you're able to interact with them a little different because they're growing just like you are. They're more of a brother where we both need role models. And I had a brother in there that was only a few years older than me, and he was Black, and he was from the same powerful gang Poovy was at, which was the leader, and he was our role model. And I just seen him be mistreated so differently than me. And people, I understand we had one show where I disagreed on. Don't get me wrong, it's not like the CO is treating me, you know, light. And I'm going to have both my brothers speak on examples about that, being a white person, only hanging out with Black people and standing up for them and being able to have support. That drawed a lot of hate, and that drawed a lot of envy by the prison guards towards me. But at the same time, it was nothing, I can truly say it was nothing compared to my other brother that didn't have the support. He didn't have the lifelines to just pick up a phone and get people to call the warden or to contact the newspapers. And just based off the color of his skin, he was, you know, even some COs right in front of me said racial slurs, and they're employed by the government. They get government benefits. And I'm not on here just to bash police officers or COs, because these are people that make such an impact. That's why we have to talk about it, because there's a lot of good ones. You know, let's not forget those, but the bad in situations like these, they outweigh it, because the good can just make a difference for that instant. They can come over, they can do something great, they can encourage you, they can get a rough situation easier, and then that's it. Where the bad, they can ruin a whole life. That, you know, the whole life is gone. And that's too much power for a human being. And these COs, I'm focusing on the bad today, which I'm sure, you know, in future shows we will focus on the good, because I've met a couple good, and the effect that they have on prisoners is amazing. When a good CO walks in a room and he's on a shift and you're like, oh my God, we finally have a good one, the whole yard, the whole unit, wherever you're staying at, is going to let everybody know in power. They're going to let everybody know, hey, you're not doing no bull crap on here today. You know why? It's because we have a good CO. Nobody's going to break the rules. Everybody's going to follow the rules 100%, and they're going to make that CO's job easy, because it's nice to have somebody like that. But when you have somebody that makes everybody's life miserable and you don't respect them, it is what it is. People don't care. People are going to do what they want to do, and they don't care about the repercussions. So we have to focus on the negative officers and the negative COs, because they have so much power. I've seen my friend literally get called a racial slur by a correctional officer, and then all he did is fight back or stand up and say, hey, man, don't be calling me that, and trying to stand up for himself. And they literally went, boop, hit the button, called in the COs, gave their side of the story. His side, no matter what he said, didn't go more than a foot, and it was over. They put handcuffs on him, and he's like, all right, man, I'll see you in a month or two. It's just broken. Just nothing to do, nobody to stand up for himself. And if I've seen this, and I'm not going to say only 4 years, because 4 years is a long time, but if I've seen this in just 4 years, I mean, how many hundreds of people are in prison based off of a false or a stretch testimony or a statement by a police officer? And same thing with in segregation. How many people are sitting in segregation right now in America that are just sitting in a box for months at a time solely because a CO just doesn't like this dude? That's it, period. CO just doesn't like this dude, wants him off his unit. The guy's doing good for himself. And it's sad because POs and COs and police officers, they're supposed to be out here helping you. They're supposed to be making such an impactful difference where when you go to prison, yes, you go to prison for bad reasons. Sometimes, you know, there are small individuals, which we've already met one, which is going to be on the show later, that was innocent. And there are some individuals that really don't deserve to go to prison for their crimes that go to. But for the most part, I can honestly say most people in prison, they're in there because they broke the rules so extreme in society's eyes, where society's punishment is left nothing to do besides put them in a cage. But in that cage, they know most of these men, women are coming home back to the community where they broke the rule so significantly they have to go in a cage. So that time in between breaking that rule or doing that bad action has to be somewhat positive, because before, that's what led them up to going to prison. So now just throwing them in the box, I just don't understand how nobody thinks like, man, these people are just in a box. Like, really, how much better can they get? You know what I mean? And all the programs are, you know, you want to Google prison and you want to Google things and not experience it. Yeah, on the websites, it sounds good. But to actually go in there and see how, like, human beings are treated day in and day out, there's got to be some more people on the outside stepping up, because people that have experienced prison have been voicing it their whole life. And now, thankfully, the black community has been voicing this their whole life. You know, I grew up being the only white friend in my whole group, all of them Hispanic or black. And this isn't new. Racism isn't new. People, you know, white cops killing black people isn't new. This has been going on forever. It's just finally, it's 2020. It's a safer environment to speak where, you know, if you have a little bit of money and a little bit of power as a black individual, this isn't 1990 where if you own your business and you start sticking up and putting your foot out there, badgering the police or saying, hey, protesting or standing up for your rights, where you could lose your business. Now you're getting attacked. There's no cameras around. Now you're fearing for your life. You're fearing for your kid's life going to school. That's not the case anymore. There's cameras everywhere now. Finally, there's been enough black people to make it to somewhat level of power where the rappers now, we finally, you know, have enough black African-American rappers that have enough millions of followers and millions of dollars to back their words. Same thing with actors, actresses, sports players. Like, it's 2020. Black people finally have hundreds, if not thousands, of people that can combine together, where now if they all speak up, which they are, you see the platform of how many they reach.
I'd like to say one thing, Tom, and I'm glad you're bringing all this up, because there's a couple of things I want to say. First of all, I don't know if you heard about the 57 officers that resigned after one or two officers were arrested for the abuse that they did with either a female or a male. But one of the things is, I was watching CNN last night, and one of the lawyers were questioned on that, or a politician, and he said the reason they resigned was they were threatened by the union that if they didn't go along with them, that they would, you know, be sorry. But one of the things I wanted to say is we've come a long way, and yet we haven't, because this protest that occurred around the world, it wasn't just the blacks and browns, it was the whites too. So there are so many whites that have accepted and that are actually a part of the black and brown communities and in favor of everything that's going on. At one time, you didn't see that many whites out there protesting, but you saw a lot of them. And I want to say another thing. Blacks and browns need to respect one another if they want the respect of others. Because we have blacks and browns in political positions, in leadership roles, or even in the communities that have made something of themselves and look down at their own brothers or sisters that are not doing as well. Their own brothers and sisters that may be in the streets or that may be in homeless shelters or maybe in poor jobs or whatever the case may be. So this is an awakening call, not only for whites, not only for blacks and browns, but for blacks and browns against blacks and browns. We need to stick together. Just because we get a little power doesn't mean we have to forget where we came from or forget our brothers and sisters. And that goes to say the same with whites. White people, when they get some kind of social status, when they start climbing the ladder, they forget about their own, the ones that are left behind, the poorer ones. And the blacks and browns, the same thing. So this whole thing, this whole protest is against police brutality, and it's against the prisons and the abuses and deprivations that go on in the prisons. It's against the government officials. It's against the government employees. But it's color. We have to put aside color, because right now colors are coming together. White, black, brown, red, beige, all the colors are coming together, and the ones that aren't are the ones that are so racist that it's been embedded in them from day one, from the day they were born. They can't help it, so we need to educate them. And unfortunately, if they don't want to be educated, they need to start letting them go. And I say defund the police force. Defund the police, defund the correctional facilities. Put the money where it's going to help people. Put the money into long-term residential treatment programs, long-term residential substance abuse treatment programs, long-term residential mental health treatment programs, long-term residential anger management facilities. All these can be the length of the prison sentence, but it doesn't have to be in the prisons where these people are getting these big budgets, and all they're doing with these budgets is filling their pockets, their stomachs, and everything else. They don't care about the prisoners. It's prison for profit. People need to be educated. But I'm glad you brought this topic up about the racial issues in the prisons and in law enforcement, because blacks and browns are targeted. They are targeted. But they also target one another, which they need to stop doing. They need to start respecting. We need to show one another respect. And that's what happens sometimes. I remember a friend of mine was trying to get help for a prisoner that we were working with. And he went to one of his friends. Now, here's the black guy, his friend's a black guy. The first thing his friend said, his friend had a little social status up there. The first thing his friend said was, oh, they're all punks. They're all no good. They started talking about these people. And what this man didn't know, and I responded to him, what he didn't know is the young man he was talking about was a college-educated student who had a breakdown when he committed his crime. And this man is going to judge because he's stereotyping all prisoners, and this is a black man. So we need to start respecting one another. And it makes me so upset when I see a black down putting someone down that's of color, and they expect respect from the white man. And this is why we need to start pulling together and educating one another and educating others. If we want respect from a different race, we have to respect our own. And I have to say that.
No, you did have to say that. I hope you can hear me clearly. I heard most of the things you were saying. You just kind of broke up a little bit. I'm getting a little further in the mountains. So I hope you can hear me clearly.
We can hear you.
And if I just start breaking up, just interrupt me, please, and let me know so the show can proceed. But one of the things I'll say about that is I 100% agree with you. There's really nothing I can disagree there. My input as far as police officers and COs and POs, during this whole thing, a lot of people have said, you know, well, police officers need to go to this training and racial training and everything. You know what? That's not going to solve anything. It's really not, in my opinion.
No.
Just because I think the system is set up for them to fail. If they change their system, then it will affect their people. Right now, as a police officer, I'm not saying, like, because I have somewhat of a little hatred towards them, but just because I feel unsafe when my record's brought up and I've had the guns drawn on me twice in the 4 years I've been out of prison, and that's a very, like, holy crap, am I going to die situation where, do you know these police officers, every single month, my uncle's a police officer, every single month he has to report a certain amount of tickets. It's mandatory. Like, it's mandatory. How do you expect a profession, a 20-year cop, every single month, 12 months a year, he has if he's working 3 weeks and he doesn't find anybody breaking the law.
Okay, we're losing Tom because he's traveling and he's in the mountains. Well, we'll go on with until he can come back on with us if he can. And we also have with us Peter Vaughn, who, as Tom mentioned earlier, was a wrongfully convicted prisoner, wrongfully
right.
convicted individual. And Peter is also going to be on with us now. He's going to speak. Tom did mention that he wouldn't be able to be on with the whole show. So, Peter, you want to pick up where Tom left off?
Yeah, I was a little confused what he's talking about, an officer not making any arrests in 3 months would go to work all the time or something.
He was talking about his uncle, and he was basically saying that they have a quota that they have to meet. And sometimes
yeah.
I think what he was trying to get to was that when that happens, a lot of law enforcement will do something to make their quota,
yes.
whether they have it or not. I believe that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
But he was bringing up the facts about the racial issue.
I get that. In a lot of cases, everybody want to be a hero and make more money when they got a chance to. So I've got no grudge against police right now. Not in my life. And I shouldn't have. I won't grow, you know. Having resentment has held me back many years. I've been angry at society, been angry at police. I've been grabbed as a kid, telling me to stay away from a girl. And, you know, he was going to get me one day when I was about 13 or 14. And he was Puerto Rican. And the girl was Puerto Rican that eventually had a son by. And ever since then, I hated police. You know, what they did to my brothers. My brothers may have been wrong, but still, I felt that it was wrong both sides. So, as far as being innocent, I've met over 70 from across the country. Barry Sheck and Peter Newfield, who founded the Innocence Project out of Cardozo School of Law in New York State, have opened the Innocence Project in Louisiana in about several states, I can't recall, and then Massachusetts, where they eventually started finding mistaken identities in these wrongful convictions instead of just DNA evidence, where they cleared over 300 through volunteers who get maybe some help from companies or organizations that they seek to find money for gas and for paperwork and legal stuff to help the innocent that write them a letter. I heard it was over 100,000 people who wrote Barry Sheck and said they were innocent about 5 or 6 years ago and wanted to have their case heard. I spoke to a friend in Massachusetts, that's here in Brockton area, who did over 15 years for a murder his brother did. He's doing lifetime parole, and he's originally from Cape Cod. Before his brother could confess to the killing while he was dying of cancer, it was too late. He passed. So this man who was innocent, I met in prison in 84, 85, 86. We became real good friends. And ever since he's gotten out, we just talked. He called me an hour ago, and he's on lifetime parole. Now, as far as getting out and having resentments against police and always being angry, I don't feel that way. No, I don't like them all, and there's none I do associate with in my life to tell them anything at all anyway. So basically, I live a peaceful life because that's all I wanted, to grow up and be peaceful and happy. And I did that because jail saved my life the last time. I was homeless and on drugs. Like 99% of the inmates across the country got drug and alcohol-related crimes. Yes, they broke the law, but still, there's some innocent factors there where they grew up in bad environments, broken homes. They come from abusive relationships. They come from abusive parents, our brothers and sisters. And they had nowhere to turn to the street for answers. And the answers were in drugs for relief and alcohol. And to get more and more drugs and alcohol, you have to steal. And then you go to prison. If you never get better and you think about what you did, and you don't have a fellowship or any kind of recovery plan when you get out, it's right back in again. In Massachusetts, Governor Patrick, then governor, used to have the Celia Reckitt law in 15 years. He made it 10. for felony and 5 for misdemeanor. So without fixing the drug problem in prison, before they come home, they chances are going back and getting out and repeating the same habits again are very likely. So because I learned from being saved, being homeless and on the street, for breaking into a car, to steal something out of the car. And I was homeless.
Are you,
and with my brother,
are you,
yeah.
Are you aware now, Peter, that a lot of people involved with drugs are serving life sentences? Since you've been out?
I know that for cocaine charges, for dealing drugs, most dealers have drug problems as well. But for most drug dealers who get life sentences for trafficking and cocaine, nonviolent offenses, I understand Barack Obama maybe freed 600 to 900 people. I've known that for years, that blacks were getting more time for crack cocaine than whites were for powder. And it all starts in the court. When the police can get away with it in the court, he get away with it on the street. And I've known that working in recovery, being sober and clean 25 and a half years, going to drug programs and seeing more whites than people of color in a room while I'm speaking, it is hurtful, because blacks are not getting a second chance. When it was crack cocaine, they were spending money taking the kids to DSS from black families and locking the parents up for cocaine, even as much as $20 a bag. And then you have the whites who need the opiate money now to cure them, where it just happened to be that way right now. But I can see where the courts are not fair in deciding whether a black needs help or not and go to a drug program, getting out of jail or either committing a crime on the street, and the whites are getting favoritism by going to drug programs to get better. That's the sad part that I see, the 32 years or the 25 and a half years clean I've been here. And
yeah.
If there is somebody black in a drug program or detox, they're light skinned. You know, they're not pitch black like we got some friends and family who are dark skinned. Blacks get favoritism and go to detox. I've seen a room full of 60 white men from 20 and up, and one black guy. And I've seen none at times. And the ones I have seen are light-skinned, who may be Puerto Rican or something, that got a second chance for drunk driving instead of going to jail like most blacks. I've seen that too long. And I've seen where people who are color come to the fellowship and not get offered help by someone who's been around longer. And I've known people who don't have experience going to prison, but go to prison and speak and maybe help somebody come out and do what they do to stay out, you know? So
I think
the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous to save my life. I'm not putting a plug in for them, which is my business that I say that, but I wouldn't have had a life. And the people who I know that are on Vivitrol to stay away from heroin and methadone don't have a fellowship. They're just put on medication to walk around like vegetables. And when they have Suboxone to sustain from using drugs and they don't use the Suboxone, they sell them, then they go and get high, and you know.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I've had prisoners say that they don't, even if they're in pain, some prisoners do not want medication because they said they drug them to a point where they become like zombies, and then they're vulnerable to other either prison officials, guards,
well,
or prisoners.
Inmates are always paranoid of being poisoned. Some thought that something's in the food, because people do stuff like that. People have done food. There's people who work in the kitchen that maybe not like all the inmates and do something to the mashed potatoes, you understand? Or do something to the vegetables, you know, with his own body fluids. So people eat that and don't know that that guy's got a resentment against everybody. He might be a sex offender that got a second chance to work in the kitchen instead of being locked up 24 hours a day and do something to everybody's food. And
this is the medication.
The inmates that are mentally ill who are not on medication for that same paranoia reason and who can use it, but don't trust the jail because the jail's not a safe place to be all the time.
Prisoners talk about the medication. They're talking about when they are being treated by the contracted medical providers, contracted with the Department of Corrections. And a lot of times these prisoners are overly medicated. Another thing is the evaluations they do. Most prisoners are diagnosed, they will diagnose them with antisocial behavior rather than post-traumatic stress disorder, which a lot of them have. They will do all these evaluations that are not what the person is actually going through. And I always say they need to defund even the Department of Corrections around the country, as well as the police, the law enforcement, and they need to put these people in places where they're going to get appropriate treatment. I don't care what kind of treatment they're in need of, they need to get it.
You see, sometimes in Massachusetts, even the head district attorney might hire his unprofessional, unknowledgeable family about the system to work in probation, who will stop everything in any way from proving your innocence to let you out. They had that happen here. The district attorney who charged me for the 3 counts of robbery had all his family working in probation. I go write a letter and never got an answer back in 1983, saying I was innocent. Years later, I find out this guy had his cousin, his family working in probation, not listening to anything, but getting paid on the system without professional.
We have a lot of people that have family in government, whether it be in the political arena of the White House, or the legislation, or if it's in the prison system. There are a lot of relatives and friends in the system, and that's why we're getting people who have no education or no knowledge of how they should be treating people, but they're coming in because of who they know or who they're related to. There's a lot of that going on. And we also have Tom back on with us.
Yeah, I'm back. I just wanted to join really quick. I'm in the mountains, so sorry. This was a last-minute camping trip. I'm glad I got to talk to the man or listen to him. I'm going to listen to as long as possible. We have you guys on the radio show, so I'm going to listen to you guys. I just wanted to say I'll tune in next Thursday. I'll be back at home. I start school on Monday, so I'll give my undivided attention, and I'll have my other two best friends call in.
Next week should be interesting, Tom. I'm really looking forward to the discussion to complete, continue with that discussion. And right now, I would like to have you and Peter talk, as long as you can, with us. You and Peter talk about the prison issues and the things that are going on.
Yeah, I just like
it's always nice to hear from
him. I just like to comment on the medication issue. When I was in prison, I've known inmates, because of drug addiction, to save their aspirin, to save their Sudafed, to save their pills, to take back to the room so they can get some kind of high, because there's no more cocaine like the streets. There's no more drinking like the streets. And the only drugs they can get is the medicine to get a little turn on from taking the pills. So what they started doing was having the CO stand in line, a correctional officer, while you take your medicine, make you lift up your tongue, open your mouth, look down your throat, make sure you swallow the pill. Now, it's not the inmate's responsibility to take. It's not responsible to take the drugs in jail at all or any kind, but that's been done. And if they're over-medicated, somebody might not be doing it professionally. And I don't know these days if it's different, if they have family working as nurses or the correctional officer and the nurses are cousins, and they're inmates who are not on medication, who are getting locked up in that 20 because they made a boo-boo, or they said something wrong or they got upset. And Those are people they're not dealing with who are suffering the most, who should be on medication but can't get it administered right in prison. It's like we got a prison hospital where inmates go to for surgeries in Boston. And it's been said they've removed the wrong leg. You know, it's been said they've died when they go to. They go to prison hospital in shackles and shackled to the prison, the hospital bed. Okay? And like my friend was saying, you know, let people know his name is Brian Pius. He's from Wareham. And Brian did over 15 to 20 years in and out of prison on parole because he had a drinking problem and a drug problem when he got out, even after 15 years. Barry Sheck, I said, founded the Innocence Project and with Peter Newfield. And every April, he has a convention. He doesn't announce it because these people are getting money that they were wrongly accused. Even after 30 years, I met people at a convention who said, in Cambridge, who says, bring me to the hood so I can get some drugs. You know, they want to get high. I live 20 miles from there. I guess he expected me to take a train with him to come buy drugs because they were from all over. New Orleans, New York, they were cleared by DNA, misidentification. And even after 30 years, I got friends in Massachusetts who still do drugs after they got compensated. So where's that money going to? If, you know, and his one friend, for example, because I met him all in Massachusetts, that had $2.3 million. And he did 7 years for shooting a police officer. And the fingerprint department and identification department blamed him for no reason. And he was killed after he got his money because he had a drug problem. He bought a $400,000 house, a Mercedes and a BMW. He got out 2004 by DNA, and someone shot him in 2007. To this day, it's an unsolved murder. And it's only 10 minutes from here where he lives. And because these people don't get out and start some kind of rehab or some kind of fellowship or program that help innocent recuperate from PTSD or bipolar or schizophrenia or any of that, they go back to drugs for relief. And that's what I did. I did the same thing. And I got rearrested, and I've been back to jail, you know. And jail saved my ass the last time. So I stay clean, and the cops don't look for me in places I don't belong because I don't go there, you know. And I speak out of school. I get paid $60 for an hour and a half to talk to a criminal justice class where these kids who are 17, 18 ain't been to jail. They don't know about the fake drugs, the stabbings, the homelessness. They go to school and they go home. And these kids type me up a letter at the end of the class telling me, thank you. I had an uncle like you. Now you let me see more clearly what you had changed like and that my uncle could have too if he didn't die. And ask me for a number. So I know a lot of people don't know. And you're talking about the rich people, even our president who can't identify with hardship because money blinds him. That's the way it is. That's life, you know. And if I don't stay clean, I can't afford to see my grandkids. They won't call. They wouldn't answer the phone. I wouldn't have a place to stay. I wouldn't pay my bills. I'd be the same old piece of shit I was when I was 25, selling fake drugs to handicapped people. I don't do that, you know. I changed, and jail saved my life because I had enough of being sick and tired. I wasn't supposed to be here. You know, I'm blessed. I got an apartment. I go out when I want to come in, and I'm grateful. And I ain't forgot about the innocent or the people in jail for crimes they did do. I have a brother been locked up 27 years. They denied him parole because he's a Muslim, and Ramadan just got over, the holy month for Muslims. 27 years, they gave him natural life for robbing the bank with a fake gun. It was a cigarette lighter. You know, for a habitual offender. You know? So, and I know he had substance abuse problems. That's my last older brother. And I couldn't go to the parole board or write them a letter and speak up for him like I did back in September if I didn't had the right sense of mind. So I give much props to you, Tom. You're doing a good thing. And the faith, you know, is hope unseen, you know, that for a better life you'll have by just staying clean, not drinking, not doing drugs, and doing the next right thing will keep you blessed and out of the harm's way.
Nice. I was listening to, I cut out one more time. This will be my last little thing because we're cutting out, but we stopped for a minute. We have good reception right now. But I agree, you know, with the medication, just so you know, at least in my state, they still do that. They still, you know, have the COs handed to you through the glass and watch you, make you open up your mouth. I just think, you know, it would be hard to get nurses to do that because they do medication at my, you know, in my state at 9 at night. So, you know, it's going to be hard to pay nurses to stay there at night. But the biggest thing I think about the prison system right now is, at least in my prison system, again, when I talk, it's hard to just say all the prison because I think they're different. I think the systems are different. I think different states have different structures, and I don't want to knock all of them, so I want to just talk about the one I experienced for a long time. The thing that I seen was the rookie guards. They would come in, and just like police officers, unfortunately, I felt like they would come in and they would be really nice, and we would tell them like, hey man, don't end up like the Sarge. And the rookie guards, they would come in with good hearts, and most of them, like I said, you know, you get bad apples for everybody. But I feel like most police officers and most correctional officers, most POs, come in good-hearted. They come in because they want to make a difference, or they come in because it's a good career and they're motivated and they want to help out. And over time, it's the system. Yes, the human being ends up being negative and bad, but over time, it's the system that makes them bad, because we've seen rookie guards come in, and at least in correctional officers where I'm from, one correctional officer watches a whole unit. 150 individuals are watching everything.
Right.
And in my unit, if a sergeant wrote you a ticket, do you know who heard the appeal? The sergeant. So the same man or woman that wrote you the ticket, the violation that you're going to appeal in segregation to try to get out, is the same correctional officer that wrote you. That the winning rate, we can already tell, is so unsuccessful. So I think it's
well,
a system.
That's what, I don't want to cut you off, but that's what we're talking about in all these cases by the police, is that the police are policing the police. My daughter was arrested a year ago by 5 white police officers. My daughter's brown skin, and she had a drinking problem. She broke her boyfriend's door, and she assaulted him. Well, she wouldn't come out the car. So there's no black supervisor in my town for black girls or black men to talk to. And the police say, okay, well, you know, I understand where you're coming from. Let me see if I can help you. And there's nobody to talk to but another white police officer. Racism is rampant in Massachusetts. It's just like there's protests here a week ago, like everywhere else. And the kids know that. Kids, they got no school right now. There's no summer jobs for them to do anything. And they hang around, they protest. Yeah, they're going to throw rocks because they think it's the right thing to do. They see everybody else doing it. But if one of us do it, we go out and protest. Oh, sure, they're going to come back when everything's calmed down. Your kids or my kids or even me. And look, why were you there? What's your problem? You know, you were good all this time, you know? So there's one cat that did 32 years in Brockton named Donnell Jones. The police covered up evidence that would have cleared him. He got acquitted 2 years ago, and they didn't want to retry him because they proved his innocence. So he was at one of the protests. But if it was me or any of these friends who were high-profile cases who made TV, and the cops know that were innocent one time, they will be after sometime after the protest. So I didn't have no part in that. And just go watch on TV feeling powerless.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, I agree with that. I don't know if I would be here 100% just because, I mean, L.A. is a little different. I might be able to, you know, blend in, but we already know with somebody, you know, from our position. Like I said, I was all over the TV. I was a high-profile case in my city, not in L.A., but that's just all I want. I want people from the system, you know. No, we can talk about any job. You can be working at Dollar General, and if you're a manager on the shift, is rude to every single customer that they check out and everything, and customers come up to you and like, man, why is that lady just so rude? You're making $9 an hour. You're not going to go up to the manager and be like, hey, this is what you should do. You're going to get fired or you're going to get mistreated now. It's the same way as CEOs. I think there needs to be more supervision. And in the state of Wisconsin, 100%, do you know when you file a harassment or any type of misconduct towards the CEO, there's only one lady in the entire prison system. One lady. She's African American. She's great, but only one lady hears all these. Only one person.
Yeah.
That's the only. They only give prisoners one lady. That is so obnoxious and so disgusting that's an issue right there. And then number two is, what happens? Why are there not people in the prison that are grounded? Make sure that these are government officials, and yes, we can all condone. You know what? They have a lot of bullcrap to put up with. But you know what? These are careers. These are not jobs. When you have a pension, when you get paid a 401k, when you have retirement benefits, that is not a job. You do not clock in and clock out. That is a career. And you know what a career is? A career is something you chose to be in. So if you choose to be in this career knowing all the stipulations, the good and the bad that come along with it, there needs to be more supervision of people that are not working for the same prison. I worked at a meat company, and the best analogy I can use is, do you know the USDA? When you go buy a beef and it says USDA approved, the USDA is employed by the government. The employees, he has nothing to do with the affiliation of that company. He is his own boss. He is everything, where he walks around and makes sure that company is doing everything they are supposed to be doing. If the head manager making $250,000 at that company with that shift tells him, hey, why are you not opening me up? It's clean. And he says, no, it's dirty. Guess what? It's dirty. He doesn't care how much money that person makes, who he does, because his job is to make sure that they are doing their job correctly.
Yeah.
There needs to be something like that in place in prison, because these COs, I'm telling you, I really believe most of them, and I have a little bias and hatred towards them, but I believe that most of them end up being good to bad by the system. I believe that in the beginning, they're 19, 20, 21-year-old young adults. And I seem like, man, this dude treats me with respect. Hey, how are you doing today? Oh, can you please put your ID out? Can you do this? I need you to do this with respect. But then over time, they realize there's no consequences.
Somewhere along the way,
And then we'll tell them, like, hey, man, why are you going to, you know, then the sergeant will come over right in front of them. You don't have to say please to them. Why are you talking to them with kindness? And then what are they going to say? They're going to be like, and then when the sergeant walks away, we're going to tell them, like, hey, man, why don't you stick up? And they'll shrug their shoulders and be like, listen, man, I'm going to lose my job.
We got a jail right in this county, like Leona was talking about, prison for profit. These people own the prison, not the state. When the state talks about saving money by building these prisons, they're actually charging the inmate, or they're charging the criminal with extra charges. Okay, for example, you got a drug offense. All of a sudden, your windows were too dark. You didn't use your tail light. These inmates are poor. You know, drug dealers who get caught, like I said, got drug problems with nice cars. Okay, tint their windows. And when you go to jail, most of the time, you got no money. Most inmates are broke. They robbed and stole to get money and got caught. So there's no money from the robber to take to jail with you. And so what happens is they don't get a lawyer. Why? They get a public defender because there's no money to get a lawyer for all those charges. And the longer you stay in prison with those charges, the more money that people. Okay. Hello.